So for our second topic, we have MG1Qs. And again, we're going to try and see what we can say about these. Okay, so what is an MG1Q or GI sometimes? It's a single server queue, an exponential interarrival times, but a general service distribution. Okay. And as I said, the problem with having a general service distribution is that it doesn't have this memoryless property. So if you think about when we're looking at MM1Qs, and for instance, the pasta property, we said that, well, it doesn't matter when an arrival happens because of the memoryless property, the amount of time that the current packet or current job getting service will have is still exponentially distributed, okay, memoryless property. So it doesn't matter when it arrives during a service, it always sees the same distribution. If you don't have the memoryless property, which again only is true for Poisson processes, then you don't have this property that doesn't matter when you arrive during a service. Yeah. When you arrive is the amount of remaining service time is going to be conditional on what you've on how much has gone before. Okay. So what that means is that the evolution of the process depends on not only the current state, but also how much time you've spent in that state. Okay, so this is called a semi-Markov process. What we'll see is you have points. You can sort of select out a subset of this that it actually is Markov, but the whole process proper is not. Okay, and again, when calculating things like, when calculating anything that's dependent on service time, the problem is, again, that it's the distribution depends on how much service time it's gotten to date. So it is time dependent now. Okay. So, what we're going to have to handle is now is what's called a residual service time. So how much service time is left in the system. And this is, the distribution is conditional on how much time has been spent in the system. Okay, so again, the first thing we'll, the first quantity we'll try to assess is our delay. And so, again, now this is going to be time dependent. So we'll start by looking at our waiting time, and we'll say that waiting time is now a function of t. And the waiting time is going to consist of two components. The time required to service all of the packets in the queue, so waiting, queuing, and then also the time it takes to clear whatever customer or packet is receiving service at the moment. Okay. So again, if, you know, we think of our queue, we always have somebody in service and then a bunch more waiting. So these are pretty much as they were before. You know, there's some distribution on their service times. And yeah, that doesn't change for this arriving guy. What changes, again, is the guy who's in service. The longer he's been in service, the less time it is until he exits. And so as you go on, as time goes on, that distribution is changing. Okay. So we call this remaining service time the residual service time RT. Okay. Now we in equilibrium, we can look at an average waiting time. And so the waiting time is the average at arrival instance. Okay. And you know, as we said, we can break that up into two portions. It's composed of the time it's going to take to serve the people in the queue, so not waiting to receive service at the moment. And so it's just what's the average number of those times the average service time, plus, again, what's our average residual waiting time. So this is the bit that gets more complicated. How can we decide on average, for any arrival, how much time is it going to take to clear the job that's in the server at the moment? Okay. So we need to calculate our two values, N Q, so a number, the average number waiting, and the residual service time. Okay. So we can solve for NQ using Little's law. So it's lambda times our average waiting time. And so that's straightforward enough. What, again, we need to deal with then is what's the average residual service time. And so to think about that, we can look at sort of as time evolves and jobs enter service, each one of those jobs has some service time that's distributed according to your general distribution. And so the residual, well, when the job just starts, you have all your service time remaining, and of course it just decreases linearly, okay, until after the service time you have nothing left. Okay. So you just have these nice, these sawtooth or triangular patterns, okay, and what we need to do is calculate what the average for that is. Well, to find the average, you sum up all the possibilities and you divide by T, or tau in this case. So if we fix an interval from 0 to tau and look at The average, well, summing up is integrating, and integrating gives you the area. The area under for any of these triangles is 1/2 s squared. So we get the sum of 1/2 s squared for all of the times. So we'd like to, so we need to massage that a little to be able to calculate that. And so what we do is this trick, we split 1 over tau into n over tau, and then 1 over n. Okay, so now we're averaging over the number of customers served. Okay. And so as we take this limit, n over tau gives you your arrival rate. Okay, so the number of customers is over time. It's the limit of the number of customers over time is your rate. And 1 over n si squared is just the expected value of s squared. Okay, so that gives you your value of r. It's lambda over 2, so that's this bit, and then expected value of s squared. And we can now plug in nq and r, or our average nq and our average r. And then we want to solve for W. Okay. So we rearrange. We can note that S bar times lambda equals rho, so rho is lambda over mu. So as far as 1 over mu, then we plug in then, and we get our average waiting time is lambda over 2, 1 minus rho, times the expected value of s squared. Okay. So this is the Palachek-Kinchina mean value formula. But what we see again is that our waiting time is now dependent on our variance, on our second moment. Okay, so our expected delay, well, that you just have to add the service time for your packet now, so you get the expected delays, the expected service time, plus our expected waiting time. Okay, and so what's this sort of shows us is that, well, distribution does matter. If we fix lambda and mu, then still our waiting times and are dependent on the variance. So the greater the variance, the greater the waiting time. So in some sense, as the randomness is increasing, so is your waiting time. Okay. Now, having said that, it's still only dependent on the first two moments, so the mean and our variance, so you don't need... So any distribution, again, with the same mean and variance are going to give you the same waiting time. Okay, so to look at a quick example, we have a transmission line with infinite buffers and exponentially distributed inter-arrival times. But now each packet is going to be composed of k sub-packets, and each sub-packet is going to have an exponentially distributed transmission time. So what that means is your service time is going to be a sum of exponentials. It's going to be a sum of k exponentials. A sum of k exponent, that's the Erlang k distribution, not a Poisson distribution. Okay. So, what we're going to need to do is figure out what our mean and variance are for the service times. That will allow us to figure out what our waiting times and our delays are. Okay, so one thing you could do is just go look it up. If you're not going to do that, then it's not terribly difficult to find. So each sub-packet is going to, again, have an exponential service time. We can, again, when you do sums, sometimes the easiest thing to do is to address it in the Laplace domain. Have a Laplace transform for your exponential distribution. Then, if you sum to, if you take the Laplace transform of a sum, then you're in the Laplace domain. It's again a product, so you're just taking the PDF and raising it to the power of k. Okay, so that's the error, as I said, that's the Erlang K distribution. Okay, so again, it's relatively easy to, so you don't need to invert that again. You can pick off the moments from that distribution. So you take the derivative, you take derivatives and evaluate them at zero. And so in the first case, you get your mean to be k over mu. And taking the second derivative, plus minus the derivatives, but taking the second derivative, you get the variance to be k times k plus 1 over mu squared. Okay. So once you've done that, you have all of the components you need to solve for either waiting time or delay. And so, don't even know it. So, here, what we've done is we've just put on numbers. So we have five sub-packets, and arrive lambda is 120 packets per second. And again, the mean transmission time for completing a packet is 2.5 milliseconds, so the rate would be 1 over that. Okay, so we're given the mean. Again, we can use that mean to determine a rate. Once we have our rate, we plug that into the variance calculation. Yeah, we can calculate rho then, and that's all we need to calculate our delay. Okay, and just sort of as a note, if we calculate the delay for our MM1Q, in this case, it would actually come out higher because the MM1Q would actually have a higher variance than this system does. Okay. So, yeah, one exercise you could do is to actually plug in the you can use, again, this formula to solve your MM1Q as well. Okay. So that's a sort of a quick reckoning about your system delays, and again from that you can, once you have system delays and rates, you can find your average queue length as well. The other thing that we tend to look for is what's the equilibrium distribution on queue length. So what's the distribution at equilibrium on the number in the system? Okay, and again, this gets a little bit more complicated because it's not a Markov process. Okay, so by pasta, the distribution is equal to the distribution of the number in the system at arrival instance, but again, the problem is that it's being complicated by that residual service, and sort of again the transitions out of the state. Okay, what we can use is what's called a level crossing property. And what this level crossing property says is that the distribution is also the distribution seen by departures. Okay. And what's the benefit of looking at departures? You have no residual just after something leaves. The residual is zero. Okay, so you're back, if you look at departures, you're back to the case where at those departure points, you're just summing up a bunch of independent random variables. Okay, and you don't have you don't have the residual with the weird distribution. Okay, so we're going to look look at departures, and then we'll wave our hands a bit about why we're happy with this level crossing property. Okay. So, let T1, T2, T3 be the times at which we have departures. And then we're going to look at a process in D, which is the number in the system at the point of departure. Okay, so it's N is only going to change when there's a departure, and it's going to record the number left or the number in left in the system immediately after that departure. It's not a birth-death process because ND is going to be dependent on how many arrivals you have during a service time, which obviously can be more than one. Okay, so you're not going to just go up by one. Okay, you're going to go up by the number of arrivals that you have. So, again, why it's nice to look at departures is that we don't have a residual. We actually just have a service time distribution the same as all the ones who are waiting. Okay. So the arrivals are Poisson. And this makes our ND a Markov chain, so it's going to have the proper memory list properties. And it's called an embedded Markov chain because we're sampling a subsection of our original system. Okay. So again, if we look at the number in the system, it's going either up or down by one at either arrival. At arrival points, it goes up by one. At departure points, it goes down by one. Now, again, we're going to sample this only at departure points. So if we look here at T1, we have our first departure. There were two in the system. One of them left. There's one left in the system. T2, we have a second departure, there's none left in the system. Okay. If we look at T3, so our third departure, we've actually had a number of arrivals. We've had four arrivals. One of them received service. Three are still left in the system, so we have three here. Okay. And again, T4, we have four in the system, but three are left. T5, two are left. T6, one is left. And T7, one is left. And then T8, none are left.
Okay. Okay, so
again, these NI and ND relate at the times of departure. At other times, they don't.
Okay, so we think we've got. Okay, so
we just define VI plus 1 is the number of customers arriving during the service of the I plus first customer.
So How does the state change from one service to the next? And again, it's going to depend on whether or not there's anybody waiting for service. Okay.
So if there's nobody waiting, then all of the departures have to be related to the arrivals. If there is somebody waiting, then again, the next time you'll have, that person will have received service, so you'll have to decrement it by one. Okay. So, if, again, the queue is empty before the arrival of the I plus first customer, then the number of customers remaining is VI plus 1. So that's equal to NI plus 1. If the queue was not empty, then the number at the I arrival, then you'll have had a certain number of arrivals, those that were already there, and then one departs. Then one will have departed. So Ni plus 1 is Ni minus 1 plus the I plus 1. Okay. So just notationally, if we let plus denote the max of 0 and x, then we can write these two as a single equation. So either, so if there's nobody waiting, then that becomes 0. Okay. So again, we've set that up by looking at what's happening at our departure points. But then, yeah, looking at what's happening at our departure points, but then, again, relating it back to arrivals. So what we said was that this is okay to do because the Poisson arrivals see our time averages, but the departures also see these time averages. Okay. So in other words, the departures see the same state of the system as the arrivals do. This is based on the level crossing property, which again just examines flows into and out of our system. And so in particular, let's look at k to k plus 1, our states k and k plus 1. And if we're in equilibrium, then the flow from k to k plus 1 has to be the same as the flow from k plus 1 to k. You know, otherwise, you're not in equilibrium. Okay. So our flow out is pi k lambda k. Our flow back is pi k plus 1 mu k plus 1. And so those two have to be equal. Now, how do we get our transitions? The transition from k to k plus 1 happens according to an arrival into state k. The transition from k plus 1 to k happens from by a departure from K plus 1, but back into K. Okay. So what that means is that the probability that the number of customers seen by an arrival is equal to K is the same as the probability that the number of remaining customers after a departure is K. Okay, so it doesn't matter which direction you're approaching from, either exiting or entering, you're going to see the same distribution. Okay, so distribution states seen by arrivals are the same as distribution states just after departures. Okay, so that's the property that we need in order to move from considering arrivals to considering departures. Okay. So now we need to try and get a distribution on this. So we'll again use our Z transform now to get a probability generating function of N, the number in the system just after a departure. And so if we can solve for N, then we've got the distribution for the system. So, our generating function, just by definition, is the probability, the sum of the probability you're in a state times z to the k. Okay. And so, we need to examine our n's from what we saw before. Okay. So we have this equation relating n and v, our observations at departure. And so again, in equilibrium, the time dependence disappears, so it doesn't matter what time you're at, the distribution stays the same. Okay. And so what we're going to need to calculate then is this. So Gn is equal to Gn minus 1 plus times, again, sums go to multiplication, plus GV. So we'll see if we can calculate GV, and we can write GN minus 1 plus in terms of GN, and then solve out for it. So, again, just by definition, our Gn minus 1 plus generating function is just given by the probability times z to k summed. Okay. Now, this just gets a bit fiddly. So the probability that n minus 1 plus equals 0 is the probability that n equals 0 or 1. Okay. And then for all of, once we've taken care of those, the case where we're taking where our max is zero. Everything else is just the max is the number itself. So probably for k greater than zero, the probability of n minus one plus equals k is the probability that n equals k plus one. Okay. Okay, so essentially, once this is zero or above, we can just remove that. We can remove the function. So, now we just rewrite everything. So we've split out, this is the case that k equals zero, and then again this is the case that k is one or greater. And so we have a zero and a one term, so it's slightly handy to look at the sum from 2 to infinity instead of 1, so we do that by taking out a z and changing the sum. Okay. So we have this uniform, when we changed from 1 to 2, what we did was get rid of the k plus 1, we dropped it down to k. So we have, again, a sort of uniform sum. We would, if we've gotten rid of the k plus 1, we'd now like it to go from k equals 0 to infinity. We add in the appropriate terms, and then again, count for them outside the sum as well. And then we get a sum from the probability n equals 1 times z drops out. We can take that out of the equation and cancel it with our probability of n equals 1 here. For the moment, we'll leave in the probability that n equals 0. The term of interest is this one that corresponds to gn of z, so it's our generating function. So we have our generating function plus it's the probability that n equals 0 times 1 minus 1 over z. Okay, so what can we do then? Well, we know what the probability that n equals 0 is, it's 1 minus rho. And so we plug that in. And so, again, what we've done there is we've got our generating function in terms of gn of z. We plug that into our original equation. and solve for GN. So we get GN is GV of Z, one less row. So fairly, it's a slightly complicated equation there. Okay. So, what's left then is our GV. So we need to find some term for GV. So V is related to the arrivals during a service, during some sort of service. And so so we want to sort of calculate that. To start, we note that our service duration is a random variable with some PDF. And the arrival process is Poisson, so the number of arrivals during that service duration is governed by the length of the duration. Okay, so if we fix the length of time we're looking at, then we have a distribution on the number of arrivals. Okay. So, again, we just have to account for all possible service distribution lengths. So you do that by essentially taking the expectation of the conditional distribution. And so you get, again, the probability that V equals K as this integral. Okay. That is possibly difficult to, probably difficult to evaluate. So, again, we're going to look at our generating function, which is actually our generating function is what we need to plug in previously anyway. So that's just the sum of the integral times z to the k. So we rearrange it, bring the sum inside, and note that this is just a Taylor series expansion for an exponential. So we have an exponential. And so our generating function is the integral of e to the of an exponential times fx. Okay. So still not completely trivial. But we can note that this is relates to the Laplace transform. Okay, so if you let S be this quantity, then you have your Laplace transform. So your generating function is just the Laplace transform of your distribution evaluated at lambda minus lambda z. Okay. And so you now have GV in terms of your service distribution. And you can plug that in to GN overall and get this formula, which is the Polichuk-Kinchina transform equation. Okay. So
what, again, that is, gives you ultimately is all of the moments of your state distribution. So you can find the expectation, the variance, and keep going on for any other moment you're interested in. Okay. And if you can invert this, you can also get the distribution explicitly. So, just our last example. So we had to use our transform equation to derive an expression for the equilibrium state distributions for the MM1Q. So do that explicit inversion. Okay. So we know what the Laplace transform of our system is, of our service distribution is. And we can evaluate that at lambda minus lambda z, which is what we need to do, and plug that in to our PK transform. And that, again, gives us 1 minus rho over 1 minus rho z. And that's relatively simple. You can take, for that, you can take the inverse transform and get your probabilities. And the nice thing, again, is that the sort of sanity check, they agree with what we would have gotten sort of through much more straightforward means for the MM1. Okay. So, again, if you can take that inversion, then you can get the distribution. But even if you can't, you're still left with all the moments. And so, you know, in particular, a lot of times it's fine to know the mean and the variance. And so the PK equation allows you to find those two moments. Okay, so that's complicated. It's, well, just mathematically, it's quite fiddly. I won't ask you to prove it, but it's all in the notes as well. So if you want to go through it at a sort of slower pace, so that's it for today. And again, we'll be sort of continuing with these topics and sort of topical, you know, we're going to return to loss networks, I believe, next. And I'll just leave it there. And again, enjoy your weekend. And I'll see you next Friday.